Thanks, Javier. And I'd also like to thank all of you for coming. I'm going to talk about chemistry, so I hope nobody's lunch was too heavy. So I want to talk about tannins in the chemical context of what they are, and to try to convince you that knowing more about the specific chemistry of tannins can help you understand their biological activities more. I think most people are really interested in their biological activities and view the chemistry part as being, I don't know, peripheral and maybe not that important, but I'm pretty convinced that tannins are better understood if we think of them as being specific chemical compounds with specific activities. So a good definition of tannins actually was dreamed up by Bates-Smith a long time ago. He talked about the three primary features of tannins. They're water-soluble, high molecular weight compounds. They give phenolic reactions. Lots of compounds give phenolic reactions, as Javier just said, so that's actually not too specific. And they have special properties such as the ability to precipitate proteins. And it's that protein precipitation characteristic that most people view as being sort of the hallmark of a compound that's actually a tannin. Now, down here I say that tannins are chemically distinct from a lot of other kinds of phenolics, low molecular weight phenolics. Even highly polyphenolic, low molecular weight phenolics are not tannins. And of course, tannins are distinct from lignans and humic substances. And I have to say I'm in an audience where I probably shouldn't even mention lignans or humic substances because I don't know so much about them. But I want to try to show you how they are distinct from tannins. So over here on the right is the nominal structure for the tannin. Lots of people actually use tannic acid, commercially available material from lots of companies. It's actually a very poor substitute for tannin, in part because when you buy tannic acid, it says on the bottle it's decagalawyl glucose, molecular weight 1701. Well, actually what's in that bottle is a whole mixture of a bunch of different compounds loosely related to this compound, but not identical. Anyway, going ahead with a comparison, so many tannins consist of a central alcohol, this one is glucose, and then esterified to that alcohol are a bunch of phenolic acids, gallic acid, a series of polyesters of gallic acid. And one of the things that's important is they have the phenolic functional group, and you can see all over this molecule those phenolic functional groups. That makes them very distinct from molecules like lignin. Lignin is, of course, derived from the cinnamic acids, and it's highly methoxylated. And if you look at it, it has really very few phenolic groups, and instead it has a lot of methoxylated groups. So it doesn't really have that basic phenolic functionality of the tannins. Humic substances, again, are highly derivatized. They probably originate from things like tannin in the soil, but they've been highly derivatized. They have amino acid constituents on them. They have carbohydrate constituents on them. And again, they're pretty highly methoxylated. There are some free phenolic groups, but there are lots of derivatized groups on them. So one thing that discriminates tannins from other compounds is this abundance of free phenolic groups, which of course gives them their characteristic reactivity. And then the other thing is that tannins are discrete molecular compounds. So this one drawn out here is decagalawyl glucose, 10 galawyl groups surrounding a central glucose. Quite different to lignin or humic acid, where we have high polymers, but they're rather amorphous substances. You can't isolate a given lignin or a given humic compound. So there are some very distinct differences. Whoops, wrong way. Okay, tannins are typically divided into a couple of subgroups. There are the hydrolyzable tannins shown on the first half of this slide. They are the ones that are esters of gallic acid and the glucose. And then there are condensed tannins, which are polymers of the rather familiar flavonoid group. We would consider both the flavonoid subunit and the gallic acid subunit to be characteristic non-tannin low molecular weight phenols. They are phenolic, they're even polyphenolic, they have a lot of phenolic functionality, but they don't precipitate protein, and therefore they don't really qualify as tannins until they've been derivatized, driven towards higher molecular weight, perhaps towards oxidized forms, and then at that point they really become tannins. Okay? So this kind of outlines the biosynthetic pathways. Plants are really great organic chemists. They can make thousands of compounds. The biosynthesis of the hydrolyzable tannins at the top of the slide, the condensed tannins down at the bottom, are completely distinct biosynthetic pathways. Plants are genetically programmed to make one type or the other type or both types in complicated ways that are dictated by the growing season, the environment, herbivores, all kinds of factors. We also have some instances where we actually have gallic acid and the flavonoid subunit combined to give us mixed tannins. A little more detail, the condensed tannins, the ones that come from the flavonoids, are high molecular weight polymers of that flavonoid subunit. The most typical ones in northern hemisphere plants are polymerized by this simple carbon-carbon linkage to give molecules that are on the order of maybe 5,000 molecular weight. They can also have a secondary linkage, an ether-type linkage. Plants that are in the southern hemisphere, quebracho, the acacias, and the wattles, often make this alternate type of condensed tannin, important mainly because another type of commercial tannin that you can purchase to use for an experimental setup is this quebracho tannin. And quebracho tannin is not a perfect choice as a tannin substance, in part because it doesn't really represent what we find typically in the northern hemisphere. It's chemically really distinct from these carbon-carbon simple linear polymers. It's got these branches, it's missing a phenolic functionality. It also tends to be a commercial mixture. It's not a pure substance, and it might have some derivatization that was done during the manufacturing process to make it quite unsuitable. Okay? So the main point here is there's lots of structural diversity amongst the natural condensed tannins. Similarly, there is, I can't get this mouse down. Change the way I'm holding it. Similarly, there's lots of structural diversity in our gallotannins. This, again, is the tannic acid type tannin, called gallotannins because when you hydrolyze them, they yield the simple gallic acid residue. And then the highly oxidized ellagitannins, which are derivatives of the gallotannin. You can still see the core glucose. You can see the gallic acid esters. And then you can see how those adjacent gallic acids have been esterified one to the next by an, or not esterified, but carbon-carbon linked by an oxidative reaction. These are called the ellagitannins because when they are hydrolyzed, they yield ellagic acid ultimately via a simple hydrolysis and then an internal lactamization to give the ellagic acid product. Okay? All right, so there's lots of structural diversity in the tannins. There are many compounds whose structures have been determined and are known. Each of them is named, and we know a little bit about where it's derived from and so on and so forth. What does that really mean in terms of the ultimate effect of these tannins? Structural diversity is reflected in plant composition. I've already mentioned that plants make a variety of different compounds. In each case, they do make specific, well-defined compounds according to programs that can be figured out. You can figure out what types of tannin your plant makes, in what sequence, and in what quantities. The structural diversity has a lot of analytical considerations. That is a whole different talk than this one, but the question of how should you analyze tannins is not a trivial question. Because there's so much structural diversity, it's hard to come up with useful general analytical techniques. And then finally, the point that we're probably most interested in, the biological fate and effects, which do vary significantly with structure and reactivity. And that's really what I want to try to convince you of. So what do tannins do? Well, tannins do almost everything you could think of. They react with protein. We've already talked about how that's their hallmark reactivity. The protein has polyamide backbone, forms great hydrogen bonds with all those phenolic hydroxyl groups, yielding high molecular weight insoluble complexes under the right conditions. Tannins can chelate metal ions. Again, those phenolic groups, if they're adjacent to one another, are geometrically spaced correctly to chelate with many metal ions. They can undergo biotic decomposition to yield CO2, serving as good substrates for microbial growth under some conditions. They can be hydrolyzed. If we have the ester type of tannin, it's relatively easy to break that ester bond and yield not tannin, but a bunch of low molecular weight phenolic material that can then go on to other fates. And finally, we can undergo very complicated oxidation reactions. Tannins are very redox active. They can oxidize to yield free radicals, which can go ahead and promote other oxidation reactions, and ultimately do lead to conjugation and formation of more complex and more poorly defined polymers. So we've looked in more or less detail at a lot of these different biological activities, in every case trying to use highly purified tannins so we can try to figure out what does structure have to do with activity. So this is typical data for protein binding type assays. In this case, we measure the amount of a standard protein precipitated as a function of the amount of tannin added using two very different tannins, a high molecular weight condensed tannin and a much smaller standard gallotannin pentagalloyl glucose. And you can see there are big differences. The two molecules have very different abilities to precipitate protein. The two molecules are very differently affected by changing conditions. And this is a pretty small change. Adding a little bit of alcohol to the solution completely suppresses precipitation by the one molecule. The other molecule goes right ahead and precipitates protein equally effectively in either solution. Now, admittedly, this is a pretty chemical system, but it does tell us something about the kinds of interactions that are going on. What is the tannin actually doing in terms of binding to and precipitating the protein? We think that when the methanol suppresses precipitation, as it does here for the PGG, the interaction between tannin and protein is a hydrophobic coating kind of an interaction. The very nonpolar parts of the tannin molecule are interacting with hydrophobic parts of the protein, unfolding it and reducing its solubility. When the interaction is more or less resistant to alcohols, we think it's more the hydrogen bonding driven cross-linking. This means that depending on what kind of tannin you have, under some circumstances, it might be a great protein binding agent. Other circumstances, it might be a very poor protein binding agent. So to just assume that any tannin is going to bind any protein under any condition is kind of a faulty assumption. Down here, I have kind of a scheme of the protein and the tannin forming these big complexes, and that is meant to remind me to tell you that there are soluble complexes as well as precipitable complexes. We always target the precipitable ones because they're analytically very accessible, but in biological systems, it's very likely that these soluble complexes are actually probably more important. Our analytical chemistry usually seems like it tags way beyond or behind the biology. Okay, we know from doing stoichiometric experiments that different tannins bind different amounts of metals. And so on the top half of the slide here, I have, again, our pentagalloyl glucose, our gallotannin. It seems to bind iron in a 2-to-1 ratio. There are 5 possible phenolic residues. It's very feasible to pick any two and say, well, the iron must be bound here and here. You could put it here and here. Really, it's totally arbitrary where you put it just based on stoichiometry. The stoichiometry suggests that only 2 out of the 5 possible positions do bind iron, though, and that's a little hard to figure. This is a condensed tannin, a simple dimer of condensed tannin, and condensed tannins seem to bind with quite a different ratio. It seems like there's 3 irons per 2 of these flavonoid subunits. And again, it's pretty easy to stick 2 irons in there, but then where are you going to put the 3rd one? There isn't any obvious additional place. And I think that's where additional chemical insights and structural information might be able to help us. We know from molecular modeling that this picture of our hydrolyzable tannin is very, very inadequate. It shows bonding, but it doesn't show shape. If you model the compound, it actually looks more like this. This is the core carbohydrate part. This part up here, and then all of these galloyl groups stick out kind of like the blades on a fan or a helicopter, parallel to one another. So you're looking at the rings from the side down here. And if you look at it like this, you can see that the rings are arranged so that there's 2 really nice spots to put your iron, but there really aren't any additional spots. Loading it up to 5 irons isn't feasible if this, in fact, is the geometry of that pentagalloyl glucose. This is a geometrically modeled picture of our dimer. This one, it is really hard to see what's going on. I put a little asterisk here to help me. So this is the oxygenated ring on the bottom subunit. This is the same ring down here. So here's our ring with the dihydroxyphenolics binding an iron. Here's the interflavan bond connecting the two rings. Here's the oxygenated ring on the top polymer. And you can see I've drawn in my two irons on those ortho dihydroxyphenolics, just like up here. But you can also see there's one more position. From the way those two rings are sort of juxtaposed at an angle to each other, there's one more place that you can easily slide an iron in. So that tells us that not only is the detail of the bonding structure, the simple two-dimensional picture, important, but understanding even more chemical detail can maybe help us understand active differences a little bit differently. I want to just comment that the three-dimensional structures I took from the literature from people who had actually done the molecular modeling, I did not model those irons in. I drew those irons in based on chemical knowledge and intuition. So the iron modeling is very loosely modeled. But the positions do look roughly correct, and you could model them in with the proper computer power. Decomposition. There's lots of literature on the decomposition of tannins by microbes and other soil organisms. It seems, at least to me, to be very contradictory. Some studies suggest that tannins are good substrates. Other studies seem to suggest they suppress microbial activity. It seems like a very mixed up story. And I think, in part, that's because tannin, in that story, has been used so loosely to describe phenolic compounds. And so we're trying to start to sort that out by looking at individual compounds and measuring how good substrates are they for microbes in soil respiration studies. And this is very preliminary data. We've only done this for a little while. But this compares CO2 production by soil microbes using catechin, which is the subunit of the condensed tannins, and it's a perfectly good substrate. Glucose in this system is burned off really fast, so catechin's not as good as glucose, but it's still a pretty good substrate. And then if you put in the polymer, the sorghum high molecular weight condensed tannin, very poor substrate. Doesn't seem to get metabolized at all in this relatively short study. And then looking at hydrolyzable tannins, again, we see the monomer, the gallic acid type monomer, pretty good substrate. The pentagalloyl glucose, a fairly good but somewhat more slowly metabolized substrate, and a really high molecular weight ellagitannin is a very poor substrate. So again, it looks like there's some structure specificity there. Okay, I'm going to skip over this one. It deals with hydrolysis versus oxidation, and really we think oxidation is more important. So this compares oxidizability of some ellagitannins, some hydrolyzable tannins, some condensed tannins, and you can see there's an enormous variation, and it looks relatively structure specific with the ellagitannins being fairly easily oxidized, the others more resistant to oxidation under these conditions. So in conclusion, tannin is a term that means lots of different things to different people. If we could be more specific and use chemically specific descriptors for our tannin, we probably would be able to discover structure-activity relationships that would help us understand what these compounds are really doing in the environment. I need to thank my students who have all contributed in many ways to this project. Certainly couldn't do any work without my students. And also the ARS, which has provided really generous support to us. And I think we might have time for one or two questions. Go ahead, Jim.
So I want to open up a reoccurring theme that you and I have talked about. Your message is chemical specificity is important. Okay.
Yes.
My question to you is how, or what are your thoughts on translating that into more accessible, I don't want to say more useful, but more accessible functional definitions? Is that a possibility, or do we have any hopes for that?
Well, I think that's why I keep trying to use this very small suite of model compounds that represent the different kinds of fundamental functional groups and linkages, and trying to use those to probe what's going on to ultimately, I would hope, be able to say, well, if you have this phenolic hydroxylation pattern and this kind of bonding, you're going to have a tannin that is very active in terms of protein interactions, but it's really not very active in terms of oxidative interactions. And so my hope would be ultimately we might come up with some kind of a classification scheme. You could do some gross chemical characterization almost at the level of do you have condensed tannin or do you have hydrolyzable tannin, and be able to predict what the activity of your particular mixture might be. Because you're right, the natural environment is mixtures. The natural environment is not pure compounds that plants exude for the convenience of chemists. So, but you know, I think it's slow going. It's slow going in part because my functional assays are so approximate of the real world, and because I never can provide you with as much compound as you want. So,
is that a realistic? I mean, is that a realistic goal?
If I had enough money.
No, I don't mean it like that.
No, I know. Well, I think it's a realistic
goal. Functional classifications, which, in my ignorance, I came to you and said, can't we do this?
Yeah.
Gosh.
I guess I hope it's a realistic goal. It's a goal I've had for a long time, though, I have to say. It's kind of been a recurring theme for me, is can we make order out of the chaos in nature of all those phenolic compounds?
Thank you.